the parameters from which they operate and what they are doing. And together, this committee has created space for us to grow in learning around those perceptions and the actual work. The work that we've been doing is relative to some of the findings that have come out of the report from DOJ in respect to the use of force and into community engagement and outreach. We also have crossover from our work on race and racial profiling that crosses over into the mental health areas. However, we don't have any mental health experts or expertise on our committee. So given our experience and expertise of work, the Human Rights Commission and the CPRC are encouraged to move forward with the work of the COAB. I think this comes from the fact that the Human Rights Commission has not met since the announcement came out last week, nor has the Community Police Relations Committee, and I cannot speak on behalf of any of those participants at this time, but moving forward is a good idea, but we are a volunteer commission, and the human rights commissioners that engage in the human rights work, the CPRC work, you know, that's just another level of consideration that should be given more thought in the settlement agreement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your service. I know you're working on a lot of different fronts. Appreciate it. Hi, welcome.
Hello, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. I am Angela Kimball. I'm with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and I'm here today as the mother of an adult child who lives with a mental health diagnosis. And I want to commend the City of Portland and the U.S. Department of Justice for working collaboratively to address issues that have contributed to the many tragic encounters between people who live with mental illness and our city's police officers. But at the same time, I'm here to ask that all of you, as our city's leaders, commit to providing the strong leadership and the sustained oversight needed to ensure that Portland becomes a city where the community and its police bureau work together to protect the health and well-being of all of its residents, including those who live with mental illness. In short, like many others, I'm here today to ask for your leadership in changing the culture of our police bureau. And a change in the police bureau culture is important because today, Portlanders fear rather than trust how many of our police will deal with how someone who is affected by mental illness will be dealt with. As an advocate, I've heard many stories, but one that truly haunts me is from a fellow mother who lives in the West Hills. She has a grown son whose mind is affected by schizophrenia. The paranoia that is a common symptom of her son's diagnosis leads him to think that his mother, is the devil, rather than the person who loves him most in this world. He refuses any help from her, and ill and impoverished, he's homeless, and he's in and out of our jails. But rather than counting on our city's police to protect and reach out to her son, she reads the papers every day, fearing that her son will be the next victim, the next James Chassis, the next Keaton Otis. No mother in our city should live with that fear. Portland can do better. The proposed settlement agreement outlines multiple actions that could well help the City of Portland and the Portland Police Bureau save lives and protect residents who live with mental health conditions. One such action is a return to the voluntary Memphis model crisis intervention teams. To implement this successfully, the city should hire a national consultant with expertise in this model, such as Sam Cochran of Memphis, Tennessee, the home of CIT. But the promise of a Portland where people trust the police to protect all of its residents, especially those who live with mental illness, cannot be decreed by a legal document, nor can it be guaranteed by a budget. It will come only with your collective commitment to bring the culture of the police bureau in sync with the mores of your electorate. As our city's leaders, this means holding the Portland Police Bureau accountable, not to the letter of the law, but to reflecting the true spirit of our beloved city. As just one of many thousands of Portlanders whose family is affected by mental health challenges, I hope we can count on you to demonstrate that leadership and dedication. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
You can move that mic so you don't have to, there you go.
Thank you. Mayor and commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. I'm heartened by the work that has been done to date on this agreement, but I would agree with many who've spoken before me that we have more work to do to make this a workable solution to a long, long time problem that we've had in the city of Portland. And we've done lots of studying. We've learned lots of things over many, 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 many years. Sometimes we implement things. Sometimes they go away. This one really needs to happen, and it needs to happen in the strongest way, and it needs to happen with the trust and the support of our community. I was very happy to see the Memphis model come up. I've been before you before asking for that consideration. And I'm glad to hear Angela mention Sam Cochran and think about the possibility of having him come here so that we're not, again, relying on ourselves to reinvent what has been very successfully ongoing in Memphis for many, many years. And as far as the COCL being someone appointed by council, responsible to council, I think we've got to take another look at that. Sam, you had asked about other cities that might have a court-appointed monitor. Yesterday's Oregonian, there was a short story on Seattle. They have a court-appointed monitor. The gal from the ACLU handed me a list of other cities that have them, New Orleans, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Los Angeles. Let's not try to do it our way. Let's do it in a way that others have stepped up to so that we can have some independence, so that we can have more support and more trust from our community. I think that's where we need to be. I think the most important thing we can do now is to really work together as a community with you as leaders, with other members of your teams, but with the community. We have to get together, and we have to have open doors, and we have to work together. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Could you give us your name, please?
Oh, sorry. Ann Brayfield, Southwest Portland.
Thank you all very much. Next four
are Jan Campbell, Shannon Pullen, Joseph Gordon, and Bill DiNardo.
Welcome. Glad you're here. Thanks for your perseverance. Would you like to begin? Go ahead.
My name is Shannon Pullen, and I'm the interim executive director for NAMI Multnomah. I also happen to love two people who live with serious mental health issues. I just want to thank Mayor Adams and the commissioners, especially Amanda Fritz, for all of her support of our work, and really to thank Chief Reese. We had the privilege of meeting with him September 29th and expressing the having a public forum for family members to speak with Chief Reese. And I actually just want to share a few paragraphs from the letter that we submitted to Chief Reese. NAMI families want a specialized CIT team that is voluntary and receives additional training to serve as first responders when 911/crisis line mental health crisis calls come in, as well as available for officers to call for assistance. We believe all officers should continue to be trained in CIT since any officer may encounter someone in crisis. We want all officers to be proficient in their use of CIT. And we also want yearly refresher courses scheduled like the yearly tactical requirements. We understand having a voluntary additional trained CIT team impacts police staffing and keeping officers on the street. We believe its implementation could actually strengthen the city budget by reducing the number of lawsuits paid out when police encounters cause loss of life or serious injury. We're also concerned, and that's not in this letter, but as an aside, we're concerned that the funding of this settlement will come at the cost of funding social services that are specifically designed to keep people living with mental illness from experiencing a mental health crisis that would potentially necessitate an interaction with the police in the first place. NAMI family members would like to see crisis intervention training incorporate working directly with peers and family members, and that's happened previously. We believe this will enhance officers' training as to better understand what mentally ill people are challenged with. Seeing peers not in crisis creates a very meaningful response from officers. It opens their eyes that these are real people with real feelings. And hearing from family members and their experience dealing with the police in a crisis situation further educates police to the human side of their work. And again, as an aside, studies have shown that the way to reduce stigma around mental illness is not particularly just around education, but about getting to know people. And I think that police officers need to see people living with serious mental illness who are living in recovery and who are doing well. NAMI family members and peers are extremely concerned about officers giving commands that people in mental health crisis cannot follow. If you have a cognitive processing disorder, you might be slow to react. You might not want to be touched. You might have other physical illnesses or disabilities that get in the way of enabling people to move quickly. And I'll shorten my remarks here because I see that I'm running out of time. But in regards to the settlement, NAMI would like to see peers and family members on any kind of oversight committee, whatever form that takes, and that we might not be trained mental health professionals, but we are experts in our personal and lived experience with mental illness and have a lot to offer the community in that regard. We would like to extend a real partnership on behalf of our members and NAMI as an organization to the city and to the police bureau. Thank you.
Thanks for all your work.
And could you make sure you submit what your written testimony, the whole thing?
I will. Thank you.
Ms. Campbell, welcome back.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm Jan Campbell, and I'm a commissioner on the Commission on Disability. And before I speak about on the issue, I just want to thank you, Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard, for all your support on disability issues. We've worked together for a long time, and this is kind of a sad moment for me because I know the two of you will be leaving. And we haven't always agreed, but your doors have always been open, at least for me, and I know others in the community. So I want to thank you very much.
If you remember, he gets to retire and collect a pension. I just get to retire.
And
it's sadder for me.
And I hopefully will continue to be able to work with both you commissioners on the council in the future. So thank you very much. The focus of the DOJ report was specific to a review of excessive force used on persons experiencing living with mental illness. The settlement agreement described Community Oversight Advisory Board has no strategic method to ensure representation of people with expertise or interest in mental health issues. The Portland Commission on Disability is engaged to represent a wide spectrum of disabilities on behalf of the residents of the City of Portland and to facilitate increased collaboration and information exchange between persons with disabilities, city bureaus, and city council. It was not consulted in any way on this settlement agreement. The agreement specifies that the current members of the Community and Police Relations Committee, CPRC, become the HRC members to work on the COAB. The Commission on Disability sees that it is disrespectful to people who experience mental illness to ask them to agree to have others acting in their name. We request to change having the five members of the CPRC on the COAB to five members selected in collaboration between the Portland Commission on Disability and the Human Rights Commission. We see the value of the CPRC continuing its vital work. Stopping work on racial profiling is what leaders in communities of color feared would happen when the DOJ focus went into mental health. It should not be either or. We need both. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Hi, welcome.
Hello. I'm Joseph Gordon, a.k.a. Tequila of Occupy Portland. I'm speaking just on behalf of myself. A year ago, I'm speaking for my significant other, a year ago, before we was got together, my significant other, he took $8.75 worth of sandwiches at a Fred Meyer's, if I'm not believed. He was approached by the police. They followed him, and basically, when they told him to stop, he threw the sandwiches at the police car, and he ended up tased, and his teeth was bashed in the front. But they don't notice he was born with fetal alcohol syndrome. He has brain damage, and also, like most people with FASD, he fell into a line of drugs. At that time, he was recovered, and soon after, his teeth was bashed. He found himself back onto drugs and just kept on rapping about the police. And I didn't know about fetal alcohol syndrome or disorder or anything. But when a recent incident just happened, and I actually picked up a book and read about fetal alcohol syndrome, and it said it all. They resist arrest. They run from authority, hyperattention, everything else. And basically, he found what I've seen since we've been together. He stopped using drugs. He started protesting. I mean, he was so positive, and then another incident happened where, I'll be honest, two of the police was very nice and approached him just well, but the one who he claims, I don't know, he claims that he was the one who tased him, he was very nasty. I mean, I even said that I know that must be the guy, and basically he resisted arrest off of me. Trespass 2 ticket and ended up to be resisting arrest assault of a peace officer and everything else. And I mean, I'm glad that, you know, something's being done finally. And I was uneducated about it until my recent episode with it. And I picked up a book and I read it. And pretty much that I just appreciate that the city is actually tackling this problem. And I just hope that, you know, people with fetal alcohol syndrome, 60% of them are in jail or in prison. And it don't help them, you know, impulsive behavior and everything. I just hope the city can work with also the judicial system as well about this problem, because prison or anything ain't going to help. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for I know it's a difficult thing to come to city council and testify about. Thank you very much for doing that. We appreciate it. Sir.
Bill DiNardo, Portland North. Participated in the Portland North Safety Action Committee for the last 3 to 4 years. I've lived in Portland for the last 22 years. Grew up in the south side of Chicago, the inner city, where a lot of my friends a long time ago were either dead or they're in jail. But I just want to comment about the Portland Safety Action Committee, what they do throughout the city with Clay Neal, with Chief Reese. You've been there a couple of times anyway, to talk. I have to tell you, if we had the communication back where I grew up, we wouldn't have even one-fourth the problems that we have back there now as I go back to visit relatives. So I just came to comment, keep communicating. It was mentioned earlier by a gentleman, people do wrong, people do right. We have to look at the safety of the public of the city of Portland. Of all the major cities in the country, this is the greatest city in the country by no means. It's wonderful. So just keep up the good work and just keep communicating. There are good and bad with everything. You try to attain a zero defect policy when you meet, and just keep continuing to do that. Nothing will be perfect, ever. When you have people that have to go to work and carry a weapon, I have to admit I have to admire those people, because though I admire people who do things that I could never do. So I just wanted to make that comment. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Next four.
We have 6 people left, and 4 want to stay together. So if I could take the 2 of them right now, Woody Broadnax and James Kalia, I believe was the last name.
Mr. Broadnax, welcome back.
Good morning. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good. Please begin.
You know, I've been listening to a lot of the testimony that's been going on today, and my major concern is that the city council thinks smartly about what is being suggested and what is being proposed. When I think of global warming and the fact that we are experiencing many disasters on the East Coast. One picture comes to mind, and that is the crane. This particular crane has a piece that's dangling from it. And a lot of the individuals, construction people, engineers were saying, well, we could send a crew up there, and they can go up there, and they'll fix the crane and pull it back to one piece. That was an unreasonable belief, as they discovered that the only way that they're going to be able to secure that crane is to secure it to the building. That was a suggestion. But what I'm saying is that we need to do the right thing first and not use the ability to save costs and et cetera, and do what we normally have been doing. So the final suggestion from these people were, we will build another crane right next to that crane, and then we'll be able to get the piece that's dangling from it. And I think that that's the best thing that we can possibly do today. As we sit here and look at the DOJ and the fact that it doesn't answer all of our interests, it needs to be thought out smartly. We need to build a new crane and be able to attach what has been failing and be able to secure that piece that is dropping off. And I think that everything that I've heard this morning, that analogy comes to my mind. We need to think smartly. And that's what I want to urge. And I appreciate any effort, because I firmly believe, and I've said this before, everyone in the United States of America has got a mental health issue. And it's incumbent upon us to be able to put it in a position where we're able to bring them back to sanity. And this is our opportunity as a city, and really it's our opportunity as a nation. My name is Woodrow Broadnax. I'm a congressional candidate for District 3, running in the 2012 elections. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
Okay. My name is James Kahn, and I'm a private citizen representing only myself. I come to this with a little bit of experience. I'm a policy analyst, and I've studied public safety, command and control, and consensus development. When I was living in California, I was a licensed psychologist. Since I came to Portland, I've served on Commissioner Leonard's commission on the IPR, and I served with Commissioner Fritz on the PDX steering committee, and you did a wonderful job. I really thank you. And for the past several years, I've been serving on the CIT advisory board. When the Department of Justice recommendations came down, I had a mixed reaction. I really liked those recommendations, and I think it's great that the city is going to make a big step to implement them. On the other hand, we'd been making them at the CIT advisory board for years, and we'd been ignored. So it was sort of frustrating to see that, hey, wow. And I don't blame Chief Reese for this. Once the word got up to Chief Reese about what we were talking about, although he had to be hit over the head with the DOJ hammer, he got the message. And he's been meeting with us, and I have full confidence that he can go ahead. To the topic of the agreement here, one of the principal items on that agreement was more community involvement. And I think I have to say, with all due respect, in creating the agreement, you have violated one of the strong recommendations of the DOJ, that there was inadequate community involvement, and the evidence from that is what you've heard here today. There are enough people who have an honest stake who haven't been heard. Now, I'm not recommending that we have 800 people meet with the DOJ to figure out what's happening, but it would have been really nice if we had some assurance that in the negotiations, those people who had the negotiation role could say, we've talked with this element of the community, and this is what they want, and we've talked with that element of the community, and this is what they want, and as we represent the community, these are the things that need to be done, and go at it that way. I think that, basically, I think the bottom line is this agreement is not yet ready for prime time and should be rethought, and it is such an opportunity to do something right and major change that it's worth taking a little bit of extra time to make sure you get it really right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. All right, last four.
Who signed up were Evelyn Murray, Lisa Haynes, Jamie McCollin, and Tequila Baker.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for your patience and perseverance.
You know, they always save the best for last.
That's right. The best for last. Who would like to begin?
My name's Evelyn Murray, and I'm a former president of the Oregon Human Rights Coalition back in the 80s when we kicked butt and we made changes for the welfare reform, not just for the state of Oregon, but the welfare reform for the United States of America picked up our work that we did. I'm now president of Family Nurturing and Caring for Family. We work with the governor's task force, well, in a way against the governor's task force, but for it, because we do look at the racial disparity and the racial disproportionality that is presented with children that are in foster care, who come out of the foster care system, have been medically treated for so many years. And if they can't find their families, they age out on the streets. So now you have a population, a young population of people who are emotionally delayed, mentally delayed. The most dangerous part is that when they age out on the system, the state stops providing them their pharmaceuticals. You have a group of people that are on the out on the streets that join those children that are from other parts of family or society that's bad. And now you have a group of people that are so heavily medicated seeking their drugs in the underground market, where since they were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the good old state of Oregon didn't have any problems providing them with their prescribed prescription, legal prescriptions. But when you age them out on the system, they don't have that support. The net's pulled from under them. So you're going to have these new homeless groups starting a new kind of gang that, what's his name, Michael Reese, the chief of police? It is sad that that officer had to shoot the Campbell boy. It's sad, but he did it. And what he did was murder. And you can call it whatever you want to call it. It was outright murder. One of the things I like about Mayor Adams, and I want to read a quote from Robert Kennedy. It says that few men are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censor of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage, Mayor Adams, is a rare commodity. It's a commodity that's braver than those that are in battle, yet it is the one essential thing that's very vital that most of you that make those decisions at 1%, and I call you guys the gatekeeper of the 1%, they don't want to change. They want things to stay the way they are. These are the battles that you have to face, and it takes a lot of courage to stand up and do that. And the racial disproportionality and the racial disparity that is here in Oregon has been here ever since the 1844 territorial decree from the territorial governor of the Oregon territories, and that thing is still on the books, and the exclusion laws are still on the books. You have police officers that are very much aware that they got some laws that they can squeak through. As a citizen that's a taxpayer, no one can tell my chief of police what he can or cannot do, especially when he's standing up for what's right. And I spoke with him earlier about that. I don't know who that person is that gave you the order that you're going to take this murderer back into your wings. But he don't have the power. The people do. Government is of the people, by the people, for the people. And when the government is not serving the needs of the people, it is our inalienable right to bear arms and defend ourselves and execute said government. And we're standing out in parks occupying. The 1% must look out at the 99% from their high rises and laugh, because there's something wrong with the 99%. I have with me here Lisa Haynes, Tequila Baker, and her friend Jamie, her partner Jamie. And Lisa's had to stand at TriMet in front of her African-American son that has issues because he's been raised in foster care. It took her 26 years to find him. And if she hadn't stood in front of him, these officers had pulled their guns and she would not stand down. She's a little bit taller than the mic here, okay? And she had to do that. And I'm saying, that's not making any sense. You know, this seemed like stuff you read about in Stephen King horror movies. And this is my daughter, Tequila, who has mental issues, but it's issues because of the stress of society. She just can't deal with it because as a gay person, she's not supposed to be. She's not supposed to. It's not normal. And as her partner, Jamie, they have the same problems. I don't support homosexuality whatsoever, but I support my daughter. I support human rights. And to continue, I know you guys got to give an answer to the feds, but the answer that you guys are about to give, like the young man that just left here, don't let them know. Don't feel pressure. I call anybody over the 60 or younger young people. Don't be under pressure to give that answer because you guys are not ready to give that answer. And I'm not going to be like most people and say, oh, I don't think. I'm telling you, you don't. You're not ready to give that answer. If you do, you're putting a Band-Aid on it. And a Band-Aid, what it's going to do, you're going to be right back here with the same committee. And
thank you. I gave you 3 more minutes.
Well, they're giving me all their minutes. I don't know if you can do that.
No. But,
well, I
just gave you 3 more minutes on your own.
Okay. Well.
So they now have 3 minutes each in addition.
But you do understand that they kind of like mentally delayed, and they do need for me to speak for them. And so you're denying them advocacy?
I would never do that.
That's what you're doing.
No, I'm going to give them time now okay. to speak as well. Well okay. said. I appreciate it
Thank
very
you.
Much. Yeah. Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Could you tell us who you are?
My name is Lisa Haynes.
Lisa, could you get just a little bit, I know Joanne Hi. Wants to chair the meeting, but could you get a little bit yes. closer?
My name is Lisa Haynes. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. As Evelyn was speaking about my son, I was here in this place, the city council room.
Go ahead.
2010 was when I first moved here to Portland, Oregon. And me and my son envisioned that we would come here and make a change. My son is from here because of foster care and adoption. And through, to me, black market and the illegal adoption in America on black families and Native families. And I spoke here in the city council meeting with my son, who was sitting right beside me, and I spoke in front of everyone. I said that I prayed that this doesn't happen to me or my son would happen to Marva Davis. I said that. And less than 2 years from this month, me and my son was attacked on the Portland Max by a drunk person, and he kept falling back on me, and all my son... He knows martial arts, and he told him, he said, I know martial arts. He said, I will protect my mom, you know. And the drunk guy, he put his hands around my son's throat, and my son had every right to defend himself. Well, long story short, everyone called the cops on us, you know, because my son handled it without injury, you know. He knew how to... He knew how to restrain someone without hurting them. And so they got away. We stayed on the max. And by the time we got off the max, no cops came or nothing. By the time we walked to the Lloyd Center Mall, over 10 cop cars came on us deep over a disturbance on the max. And they even tried to implicate my son as another disturbance was happening at the same time. They tried to put my son in the same place at the same time, two different places at the same time. We were walking into the mall, and the cops rode up on us, got out of their car, started pointing their tasers and guns at us. And I got in front of my son, and I told them, I said, you know, why are you guys after us? Y'all should be running after those guys that kept falling on me on the MAX train, you know, and disrupting the MAX. And everybody called the cops on us. You know, and they tased my son in the throat. That's illegal, for one. They dragged me away from my son on all fours, shoved me to the ground, and threw me in the cop car on my stomach so I couldn't see them murdering my son. There was witnesses all around, but there's no evidence of the videotape at the max because they got rid of the evidence. And they didn't give my son medical attention or anything. They dogpiled him. It was over 10 cops on top of my son. This was the TriMet that did this. And the following year, I was attacked by the same TriMet cops because we were targeted because of they know they probably seen us on TV speaking here at the city council, and we're also activists. I was attacked another time from the first incident by the cops just standing on the corner of Foster and 82nd, just standing there out of the rain when two cops, TriMet cops, came up to me, harassed me, and asked me what was in my bag. Quite naturally, I know my rights. I didn't have to. I have a right to refuse because it's our birthright to be protected, and we're supposed to be protected by the law. That's what our tax money is for. And he didn't, and they grabbed my backpack. They forced me in handcuffs, didn't tell me why they were there until two witnesses came and said that I stole some mail at 10 o'clock in the morning, mind you. I'm going to go do something that the judge ordered me to do from the first case. When the first case, the first incident, they told me...
So, ma'am, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've got a lot of people waiting. And so what is the point you want to make sure we understand from...
That we're victims, we're citizens, we're taxpayers, we're humans, and we're being slaughtered like cows and animals in the street with no respect to humankind. And we're being attacked and racially profiled as trash and garbage, like we don't matter in this world. And I'm fed up with it. I'm fed up with it. I'm a 47-year-old black woman. I'm a 47-year-old black African-American Native black woman that moved to your town, and this is the welcome that I get. I came here because I found my son after 20 plus years. You know, I'm dealing with that too.
Thank you.
Something's got to get done.
Thank you for sharing your story. I really appreciate it very much. Hi, welcome.
Hello. My name's Tequila Baker, but my mom calls me Tequila. But it's actually a question I think that everybody would have, but it's also a question to myself of the comparison between what Evelyn and she is speaking on. And the comparison I would like to share would be police versus DHS. If the police and DHS are in a position to protect and serve someone that calls them, then they should do so. If they also have the position to use the same laws and rules mandated to break those laws, then people in our position as a community have to fight back. But the hardest thing to do is fight someone who made these laws that are also breaking them. How do you come to a city or anywhere in the United States of America where things are governed, the president's doing his thing, but yet we as the people that elect these people still choose to turn a cheek and close their eyes as if they were born blind to what's really going on? And that's all I have to say.
Thank you for testifying. I appreciate it. Would you like to say anything? Hi.
No, I'm just, my name is Jamie McCallan. I'm just here for support.
And a good supporter you are. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate you all for your testimony. That gets us to the end of the public testimony. Carla, excuse me, remind me what the main city email is for city council. Is it citycouncil@portlandoregon.gov, or what is it?
Usually it's just sent to me, my email, you mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
You can, and your email is?
Carla, K-A-R-L-A dot more, M-O-O-R-E, dash love, L-O-V-E, at portlandoregon.gov.
Or send to any of our email addresses. The record will remain open. Next week, we will have another hearing. We won't be voting on this next week. Next week, we'll be considering amendments to what's before the city council. I'd ask that the city council get to my office, suggested changes and amendments based on the testimony and feedback we get over the next couple of days, and in turn we will discuss with the Department of Justice. I want to thank everyone who testified here today, and especially for those that didn't submit written testimony and didn't have time to say everything that you wanted to say. That's why we'll keep the record open, and I do appreciate your work.
Can I just get a clarification? If we're going to do a second
first reading
next week, is it your intention to do that on a time certain?
Yes.
When do you intend to do that?
We already have it scheduled, I think, for the second reading.
Second. It's usually on regular agenda. If you want a time certain, it would be 9:45 a.m.
9:45.
We do it Thursday. On Thursday.
Oh, Thursday. Sorry.
Yeah, a week from now.
Oh boy.
Or do we not vote that day?
No, we would not vote that day.
What do we have on Thursday, Carl?
It'd be 3:30 on Thursday. I can't show you out, though, Mayor. I have an absence for you right now.
Oh, we'll figure that out.
Okay.
So tentatively pencil in 3:30 on Thursday.
Leonard's gone too.
And we will do our best with attendances, and we will be entertaining any changes. Again, if folks would get us changes before Tuesday, that gives us time to sit down with the Department of Justice. Thank you all very much. This conversation will continue. Okay, because we can. So there, she's saying I didn't approve.
Yes, she's saying that.
Oh, your sweetheart. Thank you. Oh.